Welcome to Sonata Secrets with Henrik Chilham, unlocking the world of classical music. There are few pieces in the piano repertoire that have had an impact as big as Chopin's first ballad in G minor. Thousands, if not millions of people have been touched by this piece of music throughout the years because somehow it strikes a special note of feeling personal and vulnerable, and it also transforms that feeling into intimate tenderness, to glorious triumph, and finally to passionate despair. And what's special about it is the way it fits together and how all the parts are connected, because every section grows so gradually and organically out of the old. So there are clearly different sections, but very unclear boundaries between them. And these shifts are significant and powerful, and they are what makes the ballad so potently narrative in character, although without any explicit drama. Let's start by going through the form, so you'll see what I mean, and then I'll do a detailed analysis later. So we've heard the intro, very powerful. Sets the tone. It grows quickly. We reach the first theme. This slow waltz in G minor, kind of memory of a waltz, nostalgic. It goes on for a while, and we get an important motif later on. This place. So this is part of a change, as you notice, but this is an important motif. I call it the closing motif. It's going to return. We get a transition. Some nice arpeggios, and then we reach the second theme. I'm going really quickly through it, but I'm going to do the detailed analysis later. Now we get a completely new character that grows from this. Lovely, lyrical, kind of like a nocturne in major, very reassuring. But after a while, we get the return of the first theme, but now it sounds like this. Very spooky, the pedal point, like heartbeats. Almost uncanny. There's some real tension, but this time it overcomes it and we get the return of the second theme, but now it sounds like this. So you remember the nocturne-like? Now it's totally transformed, it's in a new key, but still the same melody. Triumphant. All this energy is kind of transformed to velocity. And so on. And we reach kind of a middle section, developmental part. Scherzando, again, completely new character. This is like a almost joking, everything is fine, a jolly character. And remember this closing motif that I mentioned after the first theme in G minor. This motif is the foundation for this part. It's a variation, completely different character, but it's connected. Get some more nice runs, pianistic feast, and then we get a second return of the second theme, again fortissimo. And once again, this gives way to a return of the first theme in the spooky version. And now we're starting to go back to G minor. We start in G minor, and then everything that happens that grows goes through different keys. We have the second theme in B flat major, and then we go to E major, A major, then back to E flat major, B flat major, and here we approaching G minor. So we feel the arc of coming back. This is the final return of the first waltz theme. This time it's like it can't overcome the pressure, so it doubles down. Now we get the famous Furious Coda. Etc. We'll get to all the details of the whole piece in the analysis, but I'll just like to read a passage by Charles Rosen from his book The Romantic Generation about Chopin and the ballads. The fusion of narrative and lyric in the ballads is perhaps Chopin's greatest achievement. He realizes in music one of the major ambitions of the Romantic poets and novelists. It is largely for this reason that classical criteria of form apply so awkwardly to the ballads, although we cannot entirely dismiss them as the composer was still working with them, or, more interestingly, against them. The ballads are in narrative form, but without a program. If there ever was a program that inspired them, it is no longer relevant for their understanding. There is no narrative sense of opposition and developing struggle. The narrative form is filled by a lyric content. The movement of the ballads is that of a story, an old story in verse with a refrain, but there are no events, only elegiac expression. This was Chopin's individual solution to the pseudo-problem of romantic program music that Schumann, Liszt, and Berlioz fretted over. So, it starts with this declamation, like calling attention to the piece, big, low C octave. Forte, largo is slow, pesante is heavy or weighty. But it's a bit unclear, like, what key it's in. Because it could be C minor. But then, it's an A flat, that's a major chord. So it's not minor. And it continues up. Major. But somewhere around here it doesn't feel major anymore. So this F sharp kind of hints about the G minor tonality. We come down in dynamic, and it's a break, and then it's an answer to the big statement in piano. It's like searching. Again landing on D, longer pause, like what's going on? And then... So, we're gonna get a cadence here. C minor, that's a 4. Then G minor with D in the bass. And D7 to G minor. I'm just playing this to show the cadence, but I'm missing one note, am I not? Yes, this famous chord. So it's the D G minor with D in the bass. So dominant 6-4, but like an extra E flat. I don't really know what to call this chord. It's super dissonant because of the D to E flat. You can really savor it for a whole bar. And then lift the pedal. And now starts the main theme. So it starts as part of the resolution of the cadence. This is already how it's glued together. So before the cadence is resolved, we start the theme. So it's this slow waltz. Accompaniment is 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And the melody is long, simple, long notes after the. And then the melody has to stop and think after each phrase. And start over. Stop and then start over. So this is like this old story refrain, strophic character. Also, it's always pairs of phrases. One, two, and then start over. But I'm just gonna get to the special character that we get from all of this. The memory of a waltz, slow, stopping. It's a special mix of melancholy and nostalgia. And it's especially one chord in all this. And it's this one. It just creates that feeling. So, what is this chord? It's an A minor 7 minus 5. And it's on the second scale degree in G minor. So G minor, the second scale degree is A. And if we take a triad on A in a G minor scale, we get the diminished triad, and if we add an extension to the 7, this is the normal tetrad, a four note chord you get on the second chord in a minor scale. So it's completely diatonic, but still it's very, like it contains, it's both open and tense in the chord. It's open because we have this fifth and the 7, but it's also tense because we have the diminished, the tritone. And yeah, it's just a magical chord. And Chopin uses it to perfection to create this character. It then resolves again with the dominant to back to G minor tonic. Here it just goes to D major as the dominant and back. And then it takes another like a detour. By the way, the melody is flying up. Always nice octave lift. So we're going to B flat major and painful neighbor note, the minor third to the major third in B flat major. Like, I think you can play out a bit here because it's so nice. You've been really careful. But here you can do, it's so nice, but directly it's the half diminished chord again. And we start over with the strophic phrases. Now, for, is it the fourth time or something? We get the a new chord. It's a G7 instead of D minor, so it points forward. And the melody goes on a little episode, gets some longer lines. The left hand has some input. We get these longer lines and it gets like a warmer feeling, more of a waltz because of the longer lines and don't stop all the time, but still with some painful suspensions on top. This one, E flat to D, and now again. Here, it could be dominant to minor. That would be the expected case, but of course, Chopin surprises us. Going to A major in the first inversion, and again. So, A major surprise again to F7, and D7. these harmonic surprises kicks off this lyrical embellishment in the right hand like a mini cadenza. And again going to the major, B flat major, and again straight back to minor. I love these middle voices here. Chromatic. Going down. Hang on, now isn't this melodic fragment familiar? Let's look at the very beginning, right where we get to the first theme after the introduction. It's the same. Kind of hidden in there, some other notes, but it's tied, glued together. Anyway, now we get a new motif. And I call it the closing motif because it's like it's closing this whole section and starting the next section. But of course, nothing is ever properly closed. It's all fitting together. But anyway. So it's a rhythmic ostinato. You get a really nice groove, almost getting into a trance with this. It's strong beats on one and two of the three beats of every half bar. One, two, one, two, three. So it's like a, because all the notes come on the second beats, it's a bit of syncopation. And this is the contour. So I've hinted it's important for the rest of the piece. And it's different positions, all the chords, but it's the same contour all the time. Really emphasizing this contour as important. And amazing suspensions. Like, the harmonies are not like firmly, this is harmony, then the next, because it's always it's adding these notes on the top as suspensions, and it's kind of morphing. Morphing to something else. But towards the end, we feel a very strong harmonic direction because it's a proper cadence after this C, that's a 4, going to D, the 5, the dominant, back to G minor. So this harmonic direction, it adds to this character of, now it's crescendo and agitato and forte, so it's pushing the energy towards the next section. So this is one round of four bars. Now we get the same round, but it's a bit varied. The left-hand configuration is slightly different, but the more important is this agitato, because we're gonna end up in a higher tempo here, pushing forward. So we'll see what happens. So when we reach this, now we're getting like fast eighth notes, because this is like a higher tempo here, sempre più mosso, it says. So now what's happened? Well, the rhythmic ostinato is the same. We have this strong beats on the first and second. One, two, three. But because the tempo is higher, there are less strong beats generally, so it feels more lighter as a syncopation. Really groovy now. And let's just go continuous eighth notes through all of it. This is still related to this important contour somehow. Like. Anyway, we get down here. Vamp it for two bars. And now we get just pure arpeggios, no suspensions. That's the rest of the texture before. Just some nice runs for a long time. So D minor to the augmented plus 5 chord. I would say D plus 5 because it's the dominant, but F sharp in the bass. Could be F sharp plus 5, they're the same notes. Back to G minor. And now. That's a nice surprise, going suddenly to B flat major from this tense chord to open B flat major with F in the bass. Thinning out, smorzando, calando, like dying away. And all that's left is this horn call. That was the accompaniment middle voice. Just get a nice moment. So this is the second theme, a big contrast to all the rhythmic stuff before. It's spacious and sweeping. Lovely, lovely music. It's an octave lift. Take the melody up an octave. And another octave lift. And there's a lot of things happening in this sequence that starts here. So, first of all, there's like a rhythmic ambiguity. The right hand seems to be in three. One, two, three, one, two, three. But the left hand, and especially the pedal markings, suggest that it's in two. The bar before, it's in two in the right hand as well. And now. But harmonically, it's the real magic. So it's a circle of fifth progression, but it's kind of hidden. So on the third beat, we get the root in the chord on F minor 7. F to B flat, to B, so B flat 7, to E flat. So if you just take the left hand, we can just see the direction, and the pattern is. Continues. So this is the circle of fifth pattern all the time if it's in the left hand, like going down. But the chords, because the root comes only on the third beat, it's a bit ambiguous and a bit hidden. But still, B flat and these chromatic suspensions on top. So kind of craving the resolution to E flat with a leading note. To E flat, but it's only E flat there, and then it's A flat, and the G here is the major 7 on A flat, and again, this is the D diminished 7, that's part of the circle of fifth, and then going to G. So the music goes over faster than you have time to hear this. It just makes it a floating thing. But the pattern of circle of fifths is there in the left hand. And when it comes back, it's clearer, as we will see. Anyway, we end up on E flat major. That's the final resolution of the cadence. But again, the theme has already started as the final part of the cadence. it's a 2-5-1, F minor, B flat, 7, E flat major. So we have this circular melody. The melodic fragment is both the last part and the first part. Chopin also employs this thing in a Nocturne in B major, Opus 62, number 1. You can check it out. We got an analysis on that. Amazing stuff, really gluing together the music here. So, get the melody stated again here. And a new chord is a C7. So E natural instead of E flat. A little bit exciting. But okay, it was just a cadence, an extended cadence going back to E flat major again. It's exciting here though. But going back. And here starts like the second part of the second theme. This is even more kind of relaxed and laid back because we get the same harmony for a whole bar at a time. Just staying within E flat major here. And B flat 7 dominant with the tonic pedal, E flat in the bass, really relaxed. Some movement, but still. And this is something you get in the early Chopin sometimes, but never in the late. In the late Chopin, he always like keeps it interesting harmonically. But in the early works, you can get these sections where it's very relaxed in this way. Also, the melodic fragment here. Recognize that contour? It's the same as. But here it's major. And in another setting. But it's the same. Okay, this inner voice is so lovely. And it continues to this note in the left hand. And I have to mention this chord, A flat minor. It's like a borrowed chord in E flat major tonality. Very poignant. Get it again. Octave lift in the melody. This is really one of my favorite places in this. One of many favorite places, but because it's relatively easy compared to the rest, you can just enjoy it. Okay, now we get a pattern. A sequence and it's going harmonically in thirds. So E flat up to G minor up to B flat major up to D minor. So E flat, G minor, B flat major, D minor, going in thirds diatonically and ending up. So we're switching the character from major to minor in this way. And it grinds to a halt, rallentando kind of dies out, and here the first theme inserts itself again. But now it's a transformed character. Get this spooky. So it's over a pedal point, an E as a dominant. It's now in A minor, just another key where we ended up. And we have these like heartbeats. Boom, boom, boom. And again, this chord is a D minor over E. So we have super dissonant, super nice, or spooky. Maybe major. What was that? Let's pretend it didn't happen. Nope, can't pretend it didn't happen. It's like an outburst from nowhere. or it's this tension that's under the surface. It's there, and it pops up here suddenly, sforzato, and so it's kind of a restless recitativo. This keeps on pushing. It pushes on to break through the obstacle. And we get the second theme again, but now it's transformed to a triumphant statement. So the theme before is in A minor, but we get stuck on this diminished chord. We kind of forget where the tonic is. Then it's an E7, it's a dominant, but it could lead back to A minor. But instead, of course, Chopin surprises us and flips it to major. And that's how it gets this surprising character. So now it's one page of the second theme. Triumphant, really fleshed out. Remember, nocturne version. Now, double chords in left hand, octaves in right hand, and chord notes. So you recognize this by now, right? When the melody comes down here. The end of the phrase and the start of the theme again. It's glued together. Double octave lift here, amazing. Okay, now this sequence in the middle. So we have the circular fifth progression again, and now it's in a different way. So first of all, it's rhythmically stable here. It's no of these three against two. It's very firmly in two. And we can see the root is doing the progression on the first beats. Sorry. And so on. But what Chopin does, that's tricky. If we only play the first chord on the beat, this is a F sharp minor 7. Going to B minor, going to E7. To A, to D major 7, and then he's breaking it. But after the first beat, Chopin adds this, so it's instead of F sharp 7, he turns it into a D on the way between F sharp major 7, F sharp minor to B minor. B minor 7. E7, but turns it to C sharp minor, to A, D major 7, turns it to B minor. So he's filling out this circular fifth progression that's all the time like morphing, going between, using the harmony to make magic. We get some new stuff here, some nice octave runs in the right hand, and we stick on an E as a pedal point in the left hand. Like pushing chromatically upwards with diminished chords. And finally, the culmination. Coming down, another half diminished chord, but now it's different setting. So all this force that's built up, now this force is transformed to velocity. So it's coming down in dynamic, but it's increasing in tempo, basically. Più animato. And actually, guess what this is? reminds you of anything? Well, it's the what I call the closing motif, where we get first. It's just this configuration, or the contour. It's here as well, but different, different exact intervals, but the same contour, and it kind of offset rhythmically and squeezed into as a hemiola, but like backwards. But it repeats so. And now we get this run up that feels really uneven, and it's really tricky to not get locked in the hand when you do this. But it's actually only like a scale of B flat, or it's a scale of eighth notes starting on the B flat. And then B flat, same scale. That's one of the, that's half of the notes of the right hand. Then you have, you're outlining a diminished chord on the other half. But these eighth notes are stretched out to fit the sixth note meter of six quarter notes in a bar. So that's why it feels really uneven. But it's not, it's a system to the madness. So here we reach this scherzando part, like a middle developmental section that grows organically, of course. So. So the right hand has these fast eighth notes in a moto perpetuum configuration, never-ending movement. But the material is actually something we've heard before. It's the closing motif contour, but it's some variation. By the way, Chopin is amazing with these types of textures. He does it in Fantasy Impromptu and the waltz in C-sharp minor in Opus 64. You have the same kind of texture of continuous going fast notes in the right hand. Here the left hand has this kind of humorous thing of hitting the wrong note of the chord. When you jump, it makes it really fun character. He's actually written a whole etude on the wrong note, Opus 25. So this is really fun to play when you get the hang of it. It's quite fast though, so it takes a while. Now we get some increased chromaticism in the right hand especially. And the left hand kind of sequence pushing up here. Down and now expand with chords and quicker harmonic pulse. And we get some nice scales and arpeggios to get the culmination point. Until we end up on an E flat major with a B flat in the bass. Kind of pointing towards E flat major with a dominant in the bass, but we go back to the light scherzo character, leggeramente, lightly and swiftly. And E flat major, lovely scale over the whole register. He also does that in the Fantasy in F minor, big scale from the top to down to really call attention to now something's happening. By the way, I just skipped over, we have this rhythm here. This is almost a Polonaise rhythm. The Polonaise rhythm is in three. Bum bada bum 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 bada bum 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 bum. It's not exactly that, but it's almost like that. So Polonaise is a dance from Poland. Chopin wrote a lot of Polonaises. This is a ballad, not a Polonaise, but it's like a hint of it just here to get the really pompous, majestic feel to it. Okay, So we've landed here on the B flat again. The start of the melody is the final part of the cadence, resolving. So this is the second theme again. It's the return of the second theme for the second time. So it's the third time we hear it. Again, it's in fortissimo, triumphant, but now it's with bubbling energy in the left hand underneath. Lovely to play. So it's kind of raising the stakes a little bit more with these quintuplets in the melody and the two voices that brush up against each other chromatically. So I'm actually doing a bit of cheating here. I skip the lower voice of the upbeat. I play because it's super hard to get this right, and I've bailed out on this, and this way I can control it, and it sounds really nice, I think, with a high chance of getting it right. But more importantly, harmonically, it's the same circle of fifth. Now the chords are right, but now the bass is stuck with a B flat pedal point underneath, and it creates more tension. But let's just check the chord and the melody. So it's C major to F minor, to B flat 7, to E flat major, to A flat, and then to this, it's D diminished, but we don't have D in the bass, to G7, to C, and then it breaks off. But with the pedal point, it gets more stable and cool. Long arpeggio in the left hand here. This trill is impossible, I feel, so I do a short, but like on the beat. Like that. And a lot of ritardando to hear this extra voice of quarter notes coming in here. And we now get the same second part as the first time. So the second time, it's kind of interrupted with a scherzando section. But now we get the full section with long resonating chords. This octave sprinkles is extended 2 octaves. So it ends the same way as the first time, but it ends in another key, so it's not exactly the same. So the first time it goes up in thirds in a sequence, now this sequence is cut short, so we end up back with a D in the bass, so this is going back to G minor now, finally, after the whole piece. So this is where the first theme comes back in the spooky version again. Recitativo taking over. And this time it's not overcoming and transforming into the glorious second theme. Now it's going to minor, and this is something else. Really making a point of a clear cadence. D6-4. It's amazing sixth in the melody. D7, dominant 7, with an extra E-flat. That's a flat 9, diminished feeling. And here starts the famous and furious coda. Presto con fuoco, very fast with fire. So he introduces new material here in a very fast tempo, and it's something he likes to do in other large scale pieces as well. For example, the fourth ballad and the barcarolle also have this kind of crazy codas with new stuff. But harmonically, it's quite straightforward. So it's D minor. And this is the A half diminished to D7 to G. It's the same harmony as half diminished D7 G minor, but completely different setting. But even if it's straightforward in a musical way, it takes a lot of time to learn because it's very fast when you want to have it up in presto tempo. So like months of practice, even for me. And when we get to this place, just the A flat to D, G minor. I love how this is described by Alan Rusbridger. He's an editor at The Guardian. He's written a book about learning this piece called Play It Again, An Amateur Against the Impossible. So he's an amateur pianist, but he loves this piece and written a book about his journey learning it. It's a really good book, I can recommend it. And he writes about this very place, A Nightmare for the Right Hand, which is required to perform death-defying trapeze artist leaps in midair. That's what it is to be a pianist sometimes. Go for a second round. Now left hand gets octave, more steady bass. And pushing up with kind of sequence, left hand. Chromatic, diminished, this is like a heavy rock just pumping on those beats. Same chord, G minor, A half diminished, D dominant 6-4, D7. Now variation, extra chromatic on the right hand, and it all comes crumbling down. This is actually very easy because it's the same. And finally reach a low D octave. It's like an echo of how the piece starts, just a low octave. So this is the start of the very last part. We're still in a lot of energy. So come down, now we go up. And these notes in the right hand, they are very unimportant as notes in themselves, because they are so quick. It's just one gesture. It's not, because it's so fast. You just move your fingers and your hands. Like, this is one movement. And then, like that. But in order to be able to play that, you have to practice them as individual notes to really get the right muscle movements in your hand slowly, and then you speed up and it sounds super impressive. So reach the low again. It's like playing ping pong over the registers here. So now we get the dreaded parallel scales. The first one is not that hard because it's parallel octaves. So it's a G minor melodic scale. So it's minor with a minor third and then major when you reach the top. And it's a break. And then we have this like recitativo section. That's all this energy, it suddenly stops and we have this. It's like some funeral chords or chorale or something. And then it's a recitativo just takes over. Very unstable, like eccentric, Richard Newton, Axel Rando, pianoforte, big contrast. And this contour, recognize it? Of course, it's the same contour as the first theme. But it's in a new setting and not exactly the same, but it's an echo. This is the really hard one. Now it's in parallel 10th. Same scale, but now the melodic minor comes to life when you play it in thirds or tenths like this. But it should be like twice as fast. It's really hard. Ah, not really. Something like that. Again, chords. And now it's a final statement, and it's like all the tension throughout the piece is condensed to this statement. It's really on life and death. It can't be more tense. Forte fortissimo, it's a tritone, all registers. Double octaves, just G, it turns into a chromatic scale, and you just have one pedal. So the whole coda kind of still takes me by surprise when I'm performing this, because it's so much more dramatically intense than the rest of the piece. Even with all the big climaxes, they are romantic Chopin climaxes. This is like Beethoven angry in the coda. But it's part of the charm and what makes the ballad into the special piece it is.
Thanks for watching Sonata Secrets. A special shout out to my Patreon sponsors M. Valente, G. Edlund,